accent this entire time.
I'd like to go last. If that's
all right. Then Sean and I will go first.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Welcome, everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through Time Lords and space, where four wonderful companions join whoever the Doctor is on his travels through the Hooniverse. I am one of your luscious hosts, Dolly Dymovsky. Joining me is that ravenous youngster, Sean Norton.
Hello.
That rambunctious elderly Stephen Strum.
I mean, those are both true.
And the baby of the group, Marcus Beer.
What is this, backwards day?
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
We made it through a full season of Doctor Who. We've recorded episodes galore. We are here for the finale, The Doctor Falls. We even have some live listeners, hopefully, chiming in as well.
And we're entirely on time. We're recording this right after the episode has just aired, so everything's fresh in our minds.
Fresh.
The listeners know exactly what they're getting into.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll be late posting it. So maybe I'll post it like next week or something.
Right. But that's, you know, you're still getting the like uninterrupted, unadulterated like thoughts from our minds fresh off the episodes and stuff like that. Like this is being held in time. It's being crystallized, a time capsule, if you will.
Oh, yeah. It's a good way to put it. Well, this week we're going to be talking about The Doctor Falls, the finale of series 10, we'll call it. Peter Capaldi's supposedly his last season whatsoever of Doctor Who. I'm going to dive into the summary and then we'll get into, here's the plan for everybody. We're going to skip rumors and Christmas talk right now. We're just going to focus on this episode and kind of talk about how it relates to the last couple episodes as the lead-in story. Next week we'll focus on the season as a whole, as well as some of the rumors and the information that we have about the Christmas episode. So that'll give us some good fodder throughout the rest of the summer as we kind of touch base and go forward. So with that said, The Doctor Falls, episode 12 of series 10 of Doctor Who. And here is the summary. Escaping the next floor of the ship. Of course, this picks up right after World Enough in Time, where Missy and the Master are now released. Escaping the next floor of the ship, the Doctor tries to comfort Bill, she's sort of retained a little bit of her humanity, though it's wearing thin. The floor of the ship is a simulated countryside where the group helps defend the villagers from the oncoming Cybermen. Knowing they're overwhelmed, the Doctor attempts to convince Missy and the Master to help him. They refuse, though Missy seems conflicted. Hoping to save the villagers, the Doctor tells Nardole to take them to another floor while he sacrifices himself. Bill opts to stay with the Doctor, and Nardole says goodbye, taking the villagers to safety. Elsewhere, before escaping to their TARDIS, Missy betrays the Master to help the Doctor by stabbing him in the back, triggering the regeneration process. He shoots her in return, killing her and supposedly triggering her process. The Doctor fights out the Cybermen, but is severely wounded in the process. A lot of processes. He proceeds, another one, to blow up the whole floor, killing himself. Bill somehow survives with Heather, from all the way back in the first episode, appearing before her. They kiss, and Heather reveals she changed Bill into her species so she could live on. The two take the Doctor back to his TARDIS, Bill using her species' healing powers to bring him back before she and Heather leave to see the universe together. The Doctor awakens as the regeneration process begins. However, he refuses, attempting to stop it, and exits the TARDIS on an icy planet where he is greeted by the First Doctor. So, a lot happened in this episode. The Doctor did indeed fall. I think he fell down. This episode was, of course, directed by Rachel Talalay, who's directed several Doctor Who episodes. She also directed the previous weeks as well in this two-parter, written by Mr. Moffat, produced by Peter Bennett. Initial thoughts, since Stephen and Marcus wanted to kind of go last, I'm going to let Sean lead in this week with his thoughts, and I'll jump and jive after you, Sean.
Ooh, okay. I liked it a lot. Actually, Yeah. And I take great pride in, if in nothing else, calling that Marcus was probably wrong and that this would be the one time there wasn't a crazy Moffat-style continuity fuckery. And there wasn't. Like, yeah, he sort of meddled a little bit, but this wasn't like a rewriting of the Mondas Cybermen that we feared or were afraid it would be or any of those early stories. This was a cool sort of canonical nod to the fact that all those things did happen. And this is happening sort of parallel to that. And I actually liked the sort of extra layer that has been added to this. And I think we talked about this over the last, I'm not going to say weeks, couple hours, sure. just about some of the articles that have sprung up on this and some of the people that appreciated what Moffat did here. As somebody, and I know this drives Marcus crazy, as somebody who has really left his fingerprints all over sort of Who and the older Who stuff, this, I thought, was a very well done sort of layer to what the Cybermen wind up being and what they become and why they become that, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a return to the sort of horrific, essentially what the Cybermen really are, which is a horrifying glimpse into what humanity can become with too much body modification or too much reliance on technology, you know, whatever sort of path you want to follow that metaphor down. And I thought it was really well executed. I wish that the Master and Missy had more to do. I felt like they were sort of a side story. And I know I was really looking forward to them being really, really, really integral to this. I think they did very well. And I loved every second they were together on screen. But I wish there had been more of that. I love that up until the very end, excuse me, they stuck with the consequences for Bill, right? And we probably will debate the ending of the episode, but there was no immediate get out of jail free card, right? Like, he couldn't go back. He couldn't undo the Cybermen process. There was no bait and switch. Like, at the very beginning mm-hmm. of the episode, they tell us that, nope, she's been fully converted and everything but her brain has been, you know, burned. Like, they talk about how they took her heart and threw it in the fire and everything. And it's just crazy. And I think we talked last week about the sort of gruesome fate or gruesome process, right? Essentially the worst in New Who for a companion. I mean, Clara died, quote unquote, but even that was sort of instant. Well, in the build up to that anyway, but this was just horrific. And I like that they stayed with that. And I like that they sort of built with that and told that story throughout the episode and her coming to terms with that and knowing that, like, she basically says, like, we're not getting out of this, you know, this is it. And watching her sort of come to terms with that and the horrific reality of that, I thought was really well done. And as usual, Capaldi just put in a brilliant performance. I mean, he gave another one of those speeches that we'll be talking about forever.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah.
Like, such a, you know, it's going to go into those montages of sort of best Who speeches. And it defined his doctor, right? Like, this was the culmination of what Moffat started out with Capaldi a couple of years ago. And is he a good man or not? And standing there on the forefront of this war, this battlefield, and talking about kindness and standing for that so a few people can live a little longer. Like, it was just fantastic. I really liked it. And
yeah.
No, good.
No, I was going to say that you mentioned that speech, and I think that it seems like these last two seasons, Mr. Capaldi has done a phenomenal job of delivering this beautiful, meaningful speech. You know, and it's stuff that the previous doctors, I don't think, had the ability to do that. Maybe Tennant to some level, but Capaldi, the way his delivery, it's masterful. I'll read just a couple lines of this. He says, "I'm not trying to win." This is when he's talking to both Missy and the Master, right? "I'm not trying to win. I'm not doing this because I want to beat someone, because I hate someone, or because I want to blame someone. It's not because it's fun. God knows it's not because it's easy. It's not even because it works, because it hardly ever does. I do what I do because it's right, because it's decent, and above all, it's kind." Mm-hmm. It's just that, just kind. So I thought, I mean, there's something kind of amazing about that. And for all intents and purposes, this season of Doctor Who has mirrored world events very much so. I mean, they started a little bit last season, but this season especially, with things like immigrants, or, you know, the migrants, the refugees, the political situations and things like that, rights, human rights. And so Doctor Who this year has been a mirror to that, but trying to do it from a positive standpoint. And Capaldi's delivery in each of these circumstances has been terrific. So, yeah, this speech, that first part of the speech seems like it could be the lead-in for any, Doctor Who for president. I mean, I'd love to see a U.S. president during the inauguration say something to that point. It's not about winning. It's about doing what's right. And so the Doctor says that. So I loved this episode. Love this episode. There wasn't any bad retconning, but what I think we did manage to do was wrap up the John Simms stuff fairly nicely, because he, in the end, as the Master, he was a complete backstabbing rat, even though he got stabbed in the back. So, and then seeing Missy's rehabilitation, I thought that was fantastic, in that she did have sort of this inner fight. Should she be evil and continue down the Master's path? Or in the end, she decided, you know what? I want to do good. I think I want to do what's right. And you kind of saw that throughout the season. And the way that she decided by stabbing her old self, you know, basically killing her old life, putting her old life away. And then at the very end, her old life comes back and haunts her. And, the John Sim Master prevents her from actually being good by killing her at the very last second.
How tragic is that?
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, also totally. So well deserved, right? I mean, you have a whole season of sort of rebuilding and rehabilitating, and will she, won't she? And then you get these two Masters on the screen and this evolution of the character and how dark it had been. And then the Doctor actually succeeding in rehabilitating her.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Only to never find out about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He did never find out about it. Oh man. That is tragic. So there was a lot of. This was it wasn't a hopeful episode, because for all we know, everybody dies in this. I mean, the Doctor's he's doing everything he can to survive. And I thought what was kind of beautiful about that was he's sick and tired of changing. You know, he says, I don't want to change. I don't want to have a new face where I forget everything that's happened so far and start brand new. You know, he's gone beyond being just a good man. He is now, he understands the weight of everything that he does, to the point where he doesn't want to just do a blank slate over. I thought that was fantastic. And so there was this whole aspect of tragedy, of the realization that, Bill, like you said, Bill was, she's basically dead. For all intents and purposes, she has died. She's this immortal sort of being now, but she's dead. More so than Clara, even though this still did seem like a get out of jail free card in a way, which is kind of a bummer, but at least there is some consequence to this. She can never go back to the life that she lived before, because it's just no possibility. And then of course, Nardole, all he could do is just keep going up a level to stay ahead of the Cybermen. Eventually they're going to catch up to him and he doesn't know what to do. And I thought that was sort of fantastic at the end. And he doesn't know how to save these people. So there was a lot of tragedy in this, but some great lines, fantastic lines. And really, to me, this was the, we've had some real zingers in, end of the season, where, I mean, almost every season we've kind of felt blah about the end. I think this year to me was finally the ending to the Capaldi that I wanted. And I thought, I hate to say kudos to Stephen Moffat, but I do think he not only did he rehab Missy, but he rehabbed the Doctor. Because remember, the Doctor, kind of look at the Doctor at the beginning of Capaldi's tenure, where with what Missy ended up at, where Missy was just starting to turn into a good person towards the very end. She had rehab. The Doctor at the beginning was just absolute jerk, this cranky old jerk who, thought of humans as pudding brains, right? And now at the end, he's, he kind of started doing what was right, what was just. So I loved it. It's my favorite episode of the season because it pulled so many heartstrings. I didn't like necessarily Bill's conclusion because I thought that was a get out of jail free card. But other than that, I thought I just had, and the amazing point at the end with the Hartnell doctor, David Bradley, who, by the way, I just had watched the, I just kind of binged through seasons, you know, the last few seasons of Game of Thrones again to catch up, and he's him going from this, the evil phrase in Game of Thrones to the William Hartnell in Doctor Who was fantastic. So I'm so happy that's the direction they're taking. After all those rumors and leaks that we've had, I think it was well done. And so anyways, my thoughts, I loved it. Couple little issues, but loved it.
I want to talk more about the ending stuff in sure. particular, but I'd love to get Steven and then Marcus's thoughts before we start diving into certain plot points.
Okay. Let's go to Steven, because Marcus wanted to be last. He cleared his throat. I'm muting myself.
Oh, he's ready.
Strap in, baby child. Just get ready for... Oh, okay. No preamble here. I'm just going to go right in and say, remember last week, by which I mean exactly 7 days ago, which is when we recorded the previous episode, how, you know, Marcus...
I love you, Steven.
Yeah, well, you should. Marcus, I think you missed some of this stuff, but we definitely went into talking about the nature of, like, Bill being cyberized and cybermanned and everything like that. And it's pretty clear connotations of conversion therapy. It's allusions to that sort of stuff and to, like, Bill being trapped in a situation where she is being, like, forced to be something that she's not for the, like, visual and... psychological benefit of people around her and stuff like that don't want her to be a certain way and don't want to hear about her problems and don't want to hear about her suffering. We see that very directly with the Cybermen being muted, like their pain and their struggling being covered up in bandages and being like, instead of being addressed for the comfort of everyone around them, instead they are muted and made silent and they're still screaming on the inside. And you still see that stuff with Bill continuing into this episode, and I think it goes out on a pretty hefty bang with all that stuff, with this concept of, like, Bill being in this episode, being in a situation where she is being forced to be some, like, not be someone that she's not, but being, like, basically the people, the forces around her, the nature of the Cybermen is that they basically want to make her into something that they prefer. They don't want to think about her being something else. They don't want to think about her being a human being. They want to think see her as something that they think is better. And the connotations to this, you know, like I think it's very directly an allusion and a metaphor to the way that homosexual people and or queer people get treated throughout the world, but I think especially a lot of the times in the United States. That stuff is definitely still on here, but I think it is a more universal metaphor in general too, just for this whole concept. You see so much of the, like, well, here's another thing that's definitely not a coincidence. Like, they literally dropped Donald Trump in this episode. They literally talk about, like, read the comments because one day there will be an army. Like, very specifically referencing the rise of, like, or the resurgence of, or the, publicity of, like, global fascism and global, and these kind of movements that are gaining so much traction today and such like that. The Cybermen are so obviously a metaphor for all of that stuff, for the concept of, like racial purity and or sexual purity and unity and stuff like that. The version of unity that isn't a bunch of people working together, but the version of unity that is everyone should be like us because we say so, and if you don't, we've got a whole heaping stack of systemic violence for you. We've got all this stuff, you know, we've got systemic and literal violence for you. We're going to literally chop you up and throw the pieces of you that we don't like away, and if you get in our way, we'll just kill you outright. That sort of stuff is just... straight up all throughout this episode, and I think they handle it very well around Bill. My only one concern is Austin Walker of Waypoint has this. I'm kind of stealing his point here, but he once talked about how the X-Men aren't a very good racial metaphor for race, because if a black person gets angry and loses control in public or whatever, they're no different than any other person in the world. Whereas if, you know, Cyclops freaks out and loses control, he shoots off a laser blast from his eyes, you know, that sort of thing. And they do kind of struggle with a little bit of that, like, false equivalency here with Bill being this ultra powerful Cyberman that can shoot lasers out of her head. Like, that's a little bit off the mark, but it does lead to some cool moments where Bill continues to like stand up straight and be the like ultra confident in a way that we've, you know, compared her to Donna Noble before. I think she's a much more down to earth kind of likable, immediately likable Donna Noble in a lot of ways, in that she kind of stands up as an equal with the Doctor. We have that great moment where the Master, Missy, the Doctor are all waiting by the holographic elevators as the Cybermen are about to come up into the farm village, and who is it that walks in front of them and says, "Stay back," to three separate Time Lords, three of the most powerful, most important, and influential Time Lords in the history of the universe. It's Bill, she tells them to stand behind her so that she can deal with stuff. And I think that's a great moment for her, and it does allow us to get that kind of moment. And throughout the episode, we kind of build up to this idea of her kind of screaming on the inside and stuff like that, right down to the like very nature of the like the framing of Bill at looking like Pearl Mackie when we, you know, want to see her, because Bill sees herself the way that she sees herself, literally. And they even canonically address that with the talk about how her brain is building up a wall around this false version of herself, this Cyberman version of herself. And that ties back into the monks, which doesn't justify the entire three-parter monks debacle, but it is a nice callback that actually uses that three-parter in a way that the finale of that three-parter in a way that I think is actually useful and interesting. This concept of Bill persevered in the real world too. Like she persevered on Earth, going through things of people trying to tell her to be a certain thing and be a certain way, or that she being a certain way was bad or not good or not normal or wasn't part of the unity that they wanted and stuff like that. And she took that and used that real world experience in this weird, crazy, you know, Cyberman debacle with everything. And then, to top it all off, they come in back at the end with Heather showing up. Now, the one problem I have with this, and the problem I have that kind of generally permeates the show, this whole two-parter, is that the reason Heather works for me is because she is another queer person coming to like Bill's rescue at the end. Bill and Heather are the ones who kind of come together at the end and like decide to run off and go do their stuff and say fuck all this to all this bullshit that they've been put through throughout. And that is where they find their happiness. They find their happiness in each other, and that they lean on each other. They don't just get saved by the Doctor, like, you know, this dude who's obviously like a good person and cool and interesting and like one of the most intelligent people in the universe and all that stuff. But they don't just get, he doesn't just swoop in and isn't able to just save them. It doesn't come from an outside source to just be their like the savior of the group. She finds like happiness and escape and stability in a fellow like queer person in this. And as part of that giant overarching metaphor, I think that this entire two-parter kind of talks about, I think that's a perfect kind of way to end that. It would be, Adele, you mentioned that about it being kind of a get out of jail free card. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a get out of jail free card if the Doctor came in and did that. I think it would be a problem if he just was able to build like the anti-Cyberman machine at the end and it would be fine. But the fact that like, what it took for Bill was somebody else like her to come in and save the day, that worked out. Now, swooping back to the problem that I said I had with this, the only problem with that whole metaphor is that it's just Heather herself. Like, we have like had almost zero time getting to know Heather or getting to know why Heather and Bill like each other, so that the romance bit kind of falls a little bit flat, because why do I care about their relationship when I've hardly ever seen them on screen together with Heather not like screaming weird water screams at her the whole time, like for more than 5 seconds. So that part feels a little bit flat, on just a guttural level, but the rest of the episode is so good about that guttural, emotional, person-to-person level with the speech with the Doctor and Missy and the Master. Like you guys said, that was so great. The concept of like the Doctor and, you know, again, tying back into like the global current global politics climate and stuff like that. You've got the Doctor saying, "I don't do this because it's the right thing to do. I don't do this because I get a cookie, and you shouldn't do it either. I do it because it's the right thing to do." And he's so frustrated and so angry. It reminds me of this article that came out not too long ago. I forget where it was, but the title was something along the lines of, "I don't know how to explain to you that you should care about other people."
Right.
It was kind of making the rounds a little while ago. And he's just so frustrated and done with trying to appeal to these characters, like to this concept of friendship or this concept of like, well, you'll get something out of it, or because you should do it because of this or that or whatever. He just finally gets down on his hands and knees and says to Missy, is like, you need to be a good person because you need to be a good person. Like, there's nothing in it for you. That's not what being a good person is. That's not what being like just a fundamentally okay human being, or in this case, Time Lord, is. So please just, like, this is the make or break moment. Please just understand. And then Missy stays true to her character by not really saying one way or the other to him, right? Like, we know that Missy, like, eventually, like, tries to excise that part of her life out of herself a little bit, tries to, like, you know, who among us has not seen, you know, does not know someone or is not someone who regrets some of the things that they said and did and probably believed back in college or high school or whatever, and over time got better, you know? I'm not saying that everybody does get better. I'm not saying that, like, everybody should not be held accountable for things that they did in the past, which in this case we, you know, very directly see Missy not getting away scot-free with her past actions. Like, because bear in mind, in this, you know, not necessarily this season, but in this run of Capaldi, like, we've seen Missy, like, murder people in cold blood. We've seen her murder that, like, that soldier just for fun. You know, we saw her try to get the doctor to kill Clara that one time. She's done horrible things. She doesn't just get to get away scot-free, but she does eventually do so. Like, she is finally confronted with this, like, stark contrast between even the tiny little bit of good that's in her right now compared to, like, the complete fire and noise and craziness of John Sim, as she describes it. I can't remember the exact words she used, but she describes how crazy he is and stuff like that. That version of John Sim contrasts so heavily against even the slightest strip of morality and the slightest strip of goodness that, like, she's finally forced to confront herself and see just how crazy she has been, or the master as an entity has been over time. And, like, oh, I can't, like, maybe I'm not the best person in the world, maybe I'm not this, that, or the other thing, but now that I actually see my actions and I can see the consequences of my actions as a physical extant thing, I can't just escape that. I literally can't escape it, because he kills me. He shoots me with a laser in such a way that turns off my regenerations. But of course, this is the master who will just, you know, keep on coming back to life for till the end of time. Yeah, and then coming back to, like, just the Cybermen in general, like, tying this into global politics and stuff like that, like, the idea of parallel evolution, I think, is, like, a wonderful idea for the Cybermen. Like, we've already, the continuity already states, like, with Russell T. Davis' weirdness, like, the Neil Gaiman episode weirdness, like the weird times, all the times that the Cybermen just kind of show up and are just in the background or whatever, we already know that the Cybermen are just kind of wiggly, like they're kind of just all over the place, and tying that all together to parallel evolution and tying that into, like, a fundamental moral and ideological imperative among, like, the different species of the universe, or the at least the humans of the throughout the universe and the multiverse, as it were, tying that into that makes them so much scarier, because they are not necessarily, like, again, I think it's a very specific metaphor that can also be stretched out into a wider metaphor. They are a very specific metaphor here for the rise of global fascism and imperialism and ethnocentrism in the world today, but also they are a metaphor for just, like, the horrible things that seem to, the horrible kinds of people that just kind of pop up all over the place and draw enough people to their attention and to their cause, like, you know, to create, you know, different movements that are based around the fundamental idea of some people have more value than others. Literally, that is what the Cybermen are, right? Like, they are, saying, we are better than other people. So what if we could just make those other people into exactly like us? But at the core of that idea is the idea that the Cybermen are better. That the core of that idea is that, like, some people are more, like, some lives have more value than others. And that is, a real world thing, and is all the scarier for being a real world thing that is now appearing in Doctor Who and being tied fundamentally into their origins. And, you know, they're on Mondas and planet 13 or 14 or whatever it was. And, you know, all these different places and stuff like that, wherever you go, wherever there's people, as the Doctor says, there are someone among those people will not only believe that people are not worth protecting, like the Doctor says, like, it's not worth being kind. It's all about, like, oh, well, how am I better than them, and how can I exert that betterness over them? And then they're going to like draw more people to that cause. And kind of like diffusing their origins that way, I think makes them much scarier, more interesting. I read, I think it was I keep talking about different things I've read, but I think the Onion AV Club review of the final episode kind of talked about that a little bit, how the Cybermen are ostensibly supposed to be the second biggest threat in the Doctor Who universe after Daleks. And they're never going to be able to surpass Daleks because the Daleks are the Daleks and they're iconic and they look that way and everything like that. But like for the longest time, they've basically just been henchmen for other people, or they've been these things kind of on the outside that kind of the Doctor maybe blows up once to go get information because he's really after the Silence or the Angels or whoever, whatever. And but in this way, making them this like sort of motivated force that exists, like no matter how many times you kill them, like because you know that same article points out, the Daleks, you can kill all the Daleks. Like the thing about the Daleks is that like a Dalek here or there escapes and then makes more Daleks and then they continue on and that way. But the Daleks are the Daleks. The Daleks exist as an like as a specific unified force that has a certain belief that they're going to take to the world and they're going to try and destroy you know other people, whatever. But if you kill all the Daleks, the Daleks are gone. It's like playing a survival horror video game. If you're in Resident Evil or whatever, that's fundamentally going to be less scary than something like Amnesia: The Dark Descent, where, oh, if I have a gun, I have some limited control. I have some limited power over this world. I have some ability to dominate it. And so I feel powerful, so I don't feel as scared. Whereas with, you know, something like Amnesia: The Dark Descent, for listeners who might not know the video game, it's a horror game where you can't attack. You can only run. You can only hide. There's no way to permanently remove the things that are out there to kill you from the universe. And that's what the Cybermen here are, finally. There are these things that you fundamentally cannot get rid of. They are assholes. they are the scum of the earth, and they are going to keep on coming, and you're going to keep on fighting them as best you can by doing the right thing and trying to point out to people that like you should just be good for the sake of being good, that you don't necessarily deserve a cookie or whatever for doing what you do. Like, tying that to the Doctor's own speech, like, makes that struggle between them almost outshine the Daleks to me in a lot of ways. Like, the Daleks are obviously, like I said, they're iconic in a way that is never going to be surpassed completely. But in this brief shining moment, I think this is probably the best Cybermen story ever told, and maybe one of like the best monster stories in a Doctor Who episode ever told. Plus, we get all the great character stuff with the Doctor and the Master and Missy, and Bill's stuff with Heather, and you know, standing tall next to the Doctor and everything like that. And we get even just like Nardole's little bit about like tying into him being kind of a good, like a, is he a good person or is he a bad person? I think that falls flat a little bit just because of the same reasons that the Heather stuff fell flat, which is that we have not seen much of like Nardole's supposedly seedy past, and whenever it gets referenced, it's usually just as a joke, like off a one-liner or something like that. But this idea that, you know, he, you know, maybe needs to atone for his past and actions as well, like, you know, needs to atone for being this black marketeer out there in the universe who has been doing a bunch of like crazy stuff, like that stuff, you know, for the little bit that he was on there, that worked for me as well. Like it tied into the goofiness, but it also tied into this like multi-layered character that is Nardole, that I think that they've done a great job of handling throughout the season by not just making him the butt of every joke. You know, oh, it's so easy to make like jokes about Matt Lucas because he was on Little Britain or whatever. It's so like you could have easily squandered his like range as a character by just making him like the physical comedy relief or something like that, slapping him around and having him be a coward or whatever. But no, he has some depth to him that is sometimes used for laughs, but in this case is used for like a more serious commitment on the part of the character to go off and save these people and try to atone for his past sins, the way that the Doctor has made other characters atone for their past sins, like is it Strax, the Suntaran nursemaid? Yep. You know, he's done stuff like that in the past before too, and like the Doctor wants people to be better, and like tying, you know, even that stuff back into the Doctor and like in this little tiny way works. I think the three-parter, I think this is the story that needed more time to breathe. Maybe introduce Heather a little bit earlier in the arc of the story, and or have maybe some flashbacks to some stuff with Bill talking to Heather, you know, like so we got to know a little bit why those two characters are fundamentally like attached to each other in this way, other than the fact that like, oh, they're the only two gay characters on the show right now. You know, like that's a kind of a thing that kind of overly happens in television stories, like, oh, of course the two gay characters are like fall in love or whatever because they're the only two gay characters on the show, and that's where we can take these characters. That's the only place we can take these characters because we haven't thought about it for more than 5 seconds. But whatever, you know, it's the monks obviously should have maybe just, if that was what going to be their final episode of the season or their final episode of that story, maybe the monks could have been taken out entirely. But I think that like that extra episode should have been given in to give this story some time to breathe. Even so, absolutely fundamentally the best episode of Capaldi Doctor Who, the best story of Doctor Who, like for with Capaldi in it so far, like or maybe the Christmas special will come in and swoop up that title, but who knows. Like I love the First Doctor cameo at the end of this, so I really hope that goes some neat places as well. But yeah, best episode Capaldi's ever, the best story Capaldi's ever been in, and maybe the best, one of the best stories of new modern Who, in my opinion.
Whew, speaking of breathing.
I'm gonna
Hey, Dolly, you remember when Steven needed us to start so he could get a recap of what the episode was all about?
Hey, you know, you knew I was going to have feelings about this episode. Like, coming off of last week, 7 days ago, exactly, you knew I was going to have opinions. Like,
well,
the whole world
did. Yeah. Well, wow, that's a lot to take in, but... because you had a lot to say, I think.
I thought I could have said a little bit more. I thought, you know what? I thought I could have. Yeah. Here, just mute yourselves again, and I'll just get back in there.
Let's let Marcus talk a little bit. That would be helpful. Marcus, that's your turn. Can you top that?
What Steve said.
All right. This has been the Lowly TARDIS. Thank you all for coming.
How the fuck do I follow that one? That was a dissertation. Are you going to like Fargo University of Doctor Whoism?
No, but I did.
That was fucking mental. I mean, dude, it was beautiful.
Yeah, it was
beautiful. Totally. I mean, you know, you've basically, you know, enlightened me, aroused me, repulsed me. I mean, I don't know what to do. I will offer one suggestion with regards to Bill and her cosmic date. And it's very simple. And I mean, because I don't want to overthink it. And for me, it just struck me as this, because I am a simple old man at times. And it was just, it was love. It was star-crossed lovers, love at first sight. They had that connection from the get-go before she got, absorbed, alienized.
You hopeless romantic.
It's just, I honestly think that while you can actually analyze so many aspects of Doctor Who, and a lot of the points that Steve made were absolutely brilliant. I mean, we've all discussed, and you know, all the points you guys have made tonight. And sorry, my dog is barking. My wife's coming home from work.
Don't worry about it.
But yeah, I mean, we can overanalyze, or not even overanalyze, we can analyze and dissect a lot of the thinking behind Doctor Who and the fascism thing that's come up, and how that's an allegory of the Cybermen, and how all the Cybermen are an allegory for fascism, and, you know, the Trumpism rise and all that stuff. But I think some things, and maybe I am being an old romantic, but sometimes it is just as simple as meeting that person and knowing they are the one, and the fact that the one and that love can transcend one being turned into a Cyberman or a cyber person and the other one being turned into time traveling intergalactic goop. But it can transcend that. And I think regardless of orientation, sexual orientation, I think it's just a beautiful thing. And the fact that it was two girls, two lesbians, just made it all the more powerful to somebody like me, who is, you know, the middle-aged straight man, that, you know, and it can smack home this message to a lot of people where they're like, oh, well, all these lesbians and the gays, they all like the weird stuff and they all put fish in each other's bottoms and shag hamsters.
Now, that is true, but and also... So,
No. I mean, I'm seriously, I know I make the jokes, but...
No. You're referencing me.
That thunderbolt can happen to anybody. And look, I'm speaking as somebody whose thunderbolt saved his life 6 months ago. And I know Dali's with his thunderbolt.
Yes, yep.
And I know Mr. Strom, you don't have a thunderbolt quite now, right now, but Sean has his thunderbolt. And, you know, we're blessed because of that. And look, I am not the guy to get mushy. But that to me stood out as a shining example of, you know, Moffat saying, and, you know, giving him some credit here, that love can basically transcend anything. And the fact, like I said, the fact that it was a lesbian couple made it more powerful and perhaps rams home the message to the dimwits out there to say that we're all the same. We've all got the same needs. We all want to be loved. And when we find that person, we will travel the fucking galaxy to find them, and no amount of cyber upgrading will stop us getting to them and doing what's what. And I thought that was a very shining, beautiful little moment in a greater Moffat-y episode of Moffatisms written by Stephen Moffat that was very Moffat-y on Planet Moffat. So moving on from that, the episode, and I mean, just looking at it, two-parter even, was a curate's egg. I didn't like the first part very much. I thought it started strong, but it just, you know, when we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago, there was some
things. Sorry, last week, right?
Well, the last episode. Last week's episode for recording this 90 seconds after it's just finished. There were some things that were just shining and were just Moffat at his best, and that was Capaldi and the two masters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the two masters, you know, their separate little section. That was just, that would, you know, that's to me would have, you know, and Doctor Who gets a lot of crap, mainly from me, you know, especially Moffat as well. But that to me stood out as some of the finest writing Moffat's done. Because, and this is not meant to be an insult, but given the state of our species, it probably is. It humanized the Doctor and Missy and the Master. It stripped them down to their basest core essences, where you've got the Doctor who is good, John Sims' Master who is pure, unadulterated, fuckwaddery evil. And then you've got Missy who is coming from one to the other. I mean, she is chaotic neutral. Really, if you think about it, because she doesn't know which way she's
right,
swinging.
Right. Yeah,
totally. By this
she's
point,
she's bisexual,
sure.
Basically. She's a bit. You know, she's got a foot in both camps. Bless her. But that once that, you know, that speech on the battlefield when Capaldi was imploring them not to leave, there was no music.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the ambient sound of what was going on, and he bared his soul. And we all know Peter Capaldi is a world-class fucking actor. He's an Oscar winner, for God's sake.
Yes, he is. Totally.
He's great. An Oscar for a short film back in the day. But yeah, he delivered. And it was so bittersweet in that we know that he's been capable of this every week, and we know he's not been given that ammunition every week. He's a fucking marksman when it comes to acting. He can hit a target from 3 miles away, 99 times out of 100, and he's not been given the right ammo.
Sure.
Sometimes he's just given a gun with no ammo and has to run across the field.
Hang on, did I not shut the fuck up for yours?
Sorry.
Did I not shut the fuck up for all your bitches?
Got him.
So, yeah, I'm on a train of thought. Just bear with me.
Sorry.
I'm very easily derailed. I'm an old man. So, yeah, I just thought that was shining and beautiful. And I'm going to give Mr. Moffat another bit of kudos. I like the way he's left it with Nardole. We don't know what's going on with Nardole. The door is open. The door may never be reopened. We may not get the, you know, a grand goodbye, but I kind of like that. We've had grand goodbyes. We've had too many grand goodbyes. We've had the grandest of grand goodbyes with Clara, where, you know, it just dragged on and on and on. We had the grandest of goodbyes with the Ponds. And this felt nice. This felt organic, because sometimes people just drop out of our lives and we don't know what's happened to them. And we don't even really notice that they're disappearing. And I just like that. I mean, Nardole can return. And Matt Lucas, I've got to say, I mean, I've always loved him from his days on Shooting Stars with Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer. All the way through Little Britain and Come Fly With Me and Little Britain USA. But every time, you know, this has basically just shown his dramatic chops. I mean, you know, as I think I've said a few times this season, we thought that, oh God, it could be, you know, I'm Nardole, I'm the only gay in the TARDIS, that we were going to get that kind of thing. And it wasn't. I mean, he just varied his performance so much that he basically hit the top three of my favorite Doctor companions since the reboot. You know, obviously the other two being Bill and Donna. So, I mean, again, credit to Moffat. He's delivered two of the best companions this season. We know there's been ups and we know there's been nuclear level nasty lows. But again, not always great. I mean, his little interplay with the nanny, where she was flirting with him and coming on to him, it was just such a lovely moment of uncomfortable levity that I just loved it. It still left so many questions unanswered. Across the board, I mean, we don't know what happens to Nardole. We don't know what happens to the Master. We all assume that the Master is going to regenerate into Missy, but we don't know. That Missy is dead.
Right.
But we don't know. Because this huge explosion that took out everybody, did it take out Missy? Does the Master's laser screwdriver have the capacity to stop a regeneration? Well, we know that it can to a certain degree because we saw that with the sound, not the sound of drums, the final David Tennant episodes. No, it wasn't even, it was the sound of drums where Harold Saxon had the laser screwdriver and he basically turned off the Doctor's regenerations and fast forwarded him. But I would be happy if Moffat took that bit of canon and threw it out the window, because I really do think that particular bit is shit. I thought it was beautiful the way Bill said goodbye, but yeah. I hope it's not her goodbye. We saw Capaldi land and his fury at having to regenerate again, and that we don't know. Yeah, we don't. I mean, it was control fury, and we don't know what planet on it is on. It could be on the North or South Poles. I mean, you know, does it tap into the final regeneration of the very first Doctor? These are all lots and lots of questions. But I will say that I really did. I like this episode a lot. It had some big booms and bangs. I'm not happy with the way the Cybermen thing was finished off. You know, the whole, oh, well, the Cybermen will always rise. It's almost as if we're going back to that nasty ass fixed point in time thing that I really hate as a plot device. But the fact that, oh, yes, we have, you know, now the Masters kickstarted the Cybermen and then all the Cybermen have evolved and now they all got blown up. So if they all got blown up on this, are they still coming? Are there more coming behind? It just, you know, again, a couple of things that are uncomfortable that he leaves undone. There's some good shit that he leaves undone, and then there's some plot holes you could drive a bus through. Mm-hmm. But it certainly was the strongest episode in probably the last five, going back to maybe the first Monks episode. I gotta admit, I shed a tear when Bill left because she did. I mean,
yeah,
it's one of those things that, you know, there are certain, when Clara left, I did a jig. because if Clara had left at the end of the, you know, the Raven, that would have been beautiful.
Yeah.
That would have been beautiful and poetic, and we had a death and that was it, because death is unsurmountable. And trust me, as somebody who's been there, I know that death is a major issue. And it would have been just beautiful for Clara to end. And you know, I know we're not talking about rumors and stuff, but we obviously will talk about the Christmas special and the rumors of who's going to be back. I just thought it was a really nice ending. I haven't rewatched it. I've only watched it once. I keep on planning to go back. I mean, I've set Doctor Who just on the DVR and BBC America, you know, it's recording every single episode. So I have all the episodes from Tennant on. Bizarrely enough, they're not repeating the that first season with Eccleston, which I think still resides with Sci-Fi.
Really?
Yeah, they haven't repeated any of those, but I have like 127 episodes.
Oh, Lord.
That are sitting on my DVRs, taking up so much of it. And at some point, my masochistic side will let me revisit Capaldi's entire run, but I can't do it right now. But yeah, he's going out on a very strong one based on this episode. Now, again, the usual Moffat-y caveat could go out the window.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have the alternate, the every other year rule for the Christmas special, where the every other year is fucking good. And it last year we had Mysterio, which I really didn't like. I haven't rewatched since. But the year before that we had River Song, The Husbands of River Song, which was a beautiful bite.
Right.
So we're due. The portents are good. The everything is showing that this will actually be a strong way to go out. And the fact that, you know, we've got the first Doctor in there, and the way he was mimicking Capaldi's speech with the, you know, this won't do, I don't want to do it. So, you know, going back to Tennant again, I don't want to go. But I like the rage this time. I mean, the I don't want to go thing was just kind of sad this time. I mean, he's like world weary.
Right.
He is so world weary. And Matt Smith hinted at it, you know, where it's like, I'm so old and blah, blah, blah. But this time round, I mean, you really feel it with an actor of Capaldi's caliber. And I'm not going to say that, you know, the Christmas special will be the last time we see Capaldi, because I don't think it is. I think he will come back for a special, maybe the 60th anniversary. You know, commitments willing, that we will see him again in a TARDIS, because his time has felt short. It feels like we've been shortchanged of Capaldi.
Yeah.
Because we know how good he is. And he's dealt with so much dross that we haven't had that brilliance unfettered on a consistent run. This season has been the closest, but there's still four or five episodes in this season that were just total shite. And so below him, I would say all told, we probably had one decent 12 episodes season out of him, all told, if you combine them all, out of three, which is just not acceptable. And I'm including The Husbands of River Song in that, which I still think is one of his best performances, because the way he, you know, and I keep on harking back to it, because the way he played with River Song, that she didn't know who he was. I mean, again, that showed a different side, where he was just so amused and was almost trying to put it out there that, you know, who, you know, this is, it's me, blah, 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 and she couldn't see it. And he was just so amused by it. And it was just... Yeah, he was the best one to close out the River Song arc. And yeah, I'm going to miss him come December 25th. There's an outside chance I might actually be watching it before you guys come December 25th, because I might be back in the land of my
family. Oh, goodness.
So we're trying to figure out the logistics of that now, so... I might be texting you guys in the wee small hours to say, oh, fucking hell, it was shit. But anyway, we'll see how it goes. We'll see travel and Virgin Atlantic permitting. But yeah, I mean, I have quibbles. I have quibbles with Moffat, and I will always have quibbles with Moffat. He can infuriate, and then he can delight. Unfortunately, the infuriation has been frequent, but the delights have been so high. Those heights that he scaled have been so high, but so rare, that it at times can cancel out the shit, but not quite. But yeah, on the whole, vast improvement. I was glad I was wrong. And, you know, I did go in expecting some crap, but I'm not quite going to analyze it in the level that Stevie Boy has, but I don't think anybody could. But yeah, there you go.
Wow, great! I mean, I wasn't expecting that.
I need to start taking notes so I can go back and hit on points you guys talk about.
Dude, I haven't taken any notes. I haven't watched it. I haven't watched it in what, 10 days?
You watched it yesterday.
Oh, fuck.
No, I'm talking about.
Everybody knows that we are recording this at 7:04 p.m. on July the 13th,
2017. Considering I tweeted it out.
We started at 7:04 and then Steven's thing went an hour, so it's probably,
I didn't hate it. Some aspects of it were just beautiful, and then some aspects of it were just
needed work.
Yeah, but it just goes for the whole season. Sometimes there probably could have been 7 episodes, and it would have been a fantastic season, with some of those episodes being 90 minutes long.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
And I'd love to see that. But I know it's difficult with the Beeb. With their set, you know, they have to stick to time slots because, you know, that's the nature of the beast. I just hope now when we move off to the send off and what's going on there, that we all are nice and happy and not sent to sleep or pissed off while combating the tryptophan.
Right.
It'd be great if the bad guys in the Doctor Who Christmas special at some point were the tryptophan.
The tryptophan.
But it's spelled with like an apostrophe in there, like the tryptophan, you know.
Jeez.
Oh, no. I think the tryptophan, they're an alien race that every December 25th come down to the Western world, put everybody into a stupor, and perhaps, you know, just raid our brains or something, or in the Gruber, so I don't know. But, yeah. Or, you know, just trying to get us to start wars in our households.
Yeah, they feed off of holiday strife, off of holiday, like, oh, the racist uncle's over again. We got to deal a lot with that. It's like, oh, this is what keeps us going.
The drunkle. Well, it's hard to follow up. We've all had quite a lot to say. In fact, it got longer and longer. Sean, it's been a long time since you've spoken. You only had like 4 minutes. Do you want to say anything else?
I have a beard now.
You have a beard now.
No,
That's no way to talk about your good lady.
Oh, jeez.
She's my thunderbolt. I don't know.
Sometimes you don't have to say anything.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, you know, I mean, we do overanalyze, and I do in particular, and Steven really does.
Christ.
No, I wanted to. So personally, I thought you were going to come into this a lot more negative. So that was a pleasant surprise. I was ready to go 12 rounds, and you were just like, I loved it. And I was like, shit. That's my whole shtick.
I have a soul.
I know. Did they put it in you recently?
Very beautiful.
Props is due. But, I mean, I don't think I've been off beam in critiquing the shit in this season and the shit in other episodes. I mean, you know, it would be a very boring Lonely TARDIS if I loved every episode.
Yeah. Well, and also, I feel like all of our opinions have come down on pretty much the same ends throughout this season too. So I don't think like you're an outlier in like calling out the garbage, because there's been some garbage.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, it's funny. The one thing I thought in particular that was going to really bug you was something that sounds like you love the most, was when they, you know, how Bill got rescued at the end there and they went off into the universe. It's funny. I didn't even like the way you put it with the when you know, and star-crossed lovers things. Right. Very poetic. I didn't even think about it like that. I had appreciated it as something that if he, because I, you know, we talked about this last week, 7 days ago when we recorded, that we thought he was going to cock it up and Moffat it up, and, you know, the Doctor was going to hug her really hard with love and she's going to burst out of her cyber suit, right? But I had appreciated it because it was something that was established 12 episodes ago. And yeah, to Steven's point, like, it would have been nice to sort of know that character a little more, but.
Right.
If you're going to have that out, like doing that with no reference whatsoever to something that had happened 12 hours prior on television, like that's really well done for Moffat. Like, I actually genuinely appreciated that. And now with your perspective on them being, you know, when you know, and Thunderbolts and stuff, I appreciate it even more. Like, it was really well done, all things considered. And I know Moffat's bar is very low for finales, but yeah.
Well, it's basically... It's almost like he took the Clara ending, realized he fucked it up,
oh, yeah.
and wanted to redo it and do it right.
Yeah.
The same kind of thing. They're off seeing the universe together. They can travel through space and time. But this time, he's not, you know, it's not Clara who's hovering between, you know, in a one frozen second between life and death, buggering off with the midget from Game of Thrones in a stolen TARDIS. I mean, that, it just brings into, you know, it just basically shows how bad that Clara ending was.
Oh, it was terrible.
Well, you specifically talk about how people, like with Nardole, people dropping in and out of your life. Like the Clara face the Raven thing is like a very good thing of like, sometimes people die. Sometimes people die and it doesn't mean anything and it doesn't like, or it means something, but it doesn't like save the universe, or it doesn't like, you know, avert some disaster, or it doesn't like cause something horrible, to some horrible domino effect chain reaction or something like that. Sometimes people just die. And sometimes you leave people behind that you have to then, and those people then have to deal with it. And like that would have been, that could have been Clara's ending, and instead they took it and spun it around and did all the crazy stuff with it because they didn't want to commit.
Yeah, and I mean that's just, she was just a character that they just did not want to let go of, right? I mean, you can go as far back as that Christmas special where she was supposed to die before she got a whole other season, right? Like, and we were excited, not excited, but we were ready at that point. And to Marcus's point, like I would love if this was a realization. I don't think it is, but if this was a realization of how bad he got that and this was the proper way to do it. Mm-hmm. I think this is more, they probably knew early on that she probably wasn't going to, as far as we know, we could be wrong, but that she wasn't going to go to the next season, which is, as far as I know, is going to be a whole reboot again. And he wrote her with a very, because this is what he does, and we talk about this all the time. He's very strong when he has controlled stories with very specific beginning, middles, and ends, right? And he probably wrote her knowing she had 12 episodes. And I'm guessing she'll appear in the Christmas finale, because as of now, the Doctor thinks she's dead, right? So, but it was well done. And it wasn't this long, drawn out, like, you know, to Steven's point, like, center of the universe is going to change everything and save the whole world or whatever. She was a really strong, independent character. She stood for a lot of things that we've never seen in Who before. And her ending, which was just it is a little bit, you know, machiny a little bit. But again, so well, like the seeds being planted forever ago really winds up helping that. And I don't know. I think, like we talk about all the time, Moffat is either very hot or very cold. Like there's very, very rarely a middle ground where he's like just okay. Mm-hmm. And Bill is just one of those things between him and the people that he had working for him this year, more often than not, was just always fantastic. Always. Like, even when the story didn't hold up, then the actress wound up elevating that material. And that was really on display here when we did see her in her mind, you know, with the cyber stuff. And then at the end of the story. So
mm-hmm. And I will say, I did, and I don't think anybody's called this out, but the switching, I apologize if you did call it out and I didn't pick up on it, mm-hmm. but the switching of where you see the Doctor or somebody talking to a Cyberman.
Yes, I was just going to mention that. Yep.
Bill taught, it was Bill, how she viewed herself.
Yes, yep. Her not knowing that she's a Cyberman. Yeah.
I mean, that was really great. I mean, I obviously got Bill more screen time, which was great, but then it just made it more jarring when you'd hear the different, you know, her putting all this emotion and energy into her speech patterns and knowing it was coming out as I am the Cyber Bill Bart.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how amazingly mortifying, demoralizing, terrifying that must be to say, you know, to be able to try and, you know, say what you want to say and put the emotion behind it, but have people recoil because it's flat. It's emotional. Only the volume really goes up. And then they're terrified that, you know, you're going to blow the hole in the side of the barn again. Mm-hmm. And it just made Pearl Mackie's performance all the more outstanding. And like I said, that's why she's, you know, she's I'm number really two with a bullet behind Donna for me, because Donna mm-hmm. did have better episodes.
Right. Yeah. It's tough Donna to overcome that hump. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Donna grew as well, and the Donna from the very first episode, The Runaway Bride, to the Dr. Donna, how that arc, you know, that character changed, and to watch it reset to factory default was so brutal.
It's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It's still heartbreaking.
But to see this Bill, who's, you know, obviously been through so much, and she's grown as well, but she's grown and she's just like Donna. She grounded the Doctor in a way. Clara, Amy, and Rose tried to, you know, and the other one, Freema Angela. Martha, sorry. I spaced on her name for some reason.
Everybody does.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to do the same thing. And, you know, no disrespect to those particular actresses. They're all very, very fine actresses. But it took an unknown in Pearl Mackey to really bring this forward, mm-hmm. and a comedic actress in Catherine Tate to do that. Mm-hmm. And again, a comedic actor in Nardole to bring number three in.
Yeah.
I mean, these are actors who, you know, have shown hitherto unknown dramatic chops. So yeah, I mean those particular scenes were gut wrenching. They really were. And you know, more kudos. And I got to say, you know, it's funny. You see, today we've had the Emmy nominations come out.
Right. Right.
And you see the nominations for shows, and you see people getting, you know, very excited that Anthony Hopkins, who's a fantastic actor, gets a nomination for Westworld.
Right, sure, yeah.
Anthony Hopkins is, a proud son of Wales, one of my favorite actors, mm-hmm. absolutely. But heights in Westworld, the Capaldi did in his speech.
Yes.
And, you know, people are pissed off that somebody from The Leftovers didn't get a nomination. But again, having watched that particular garbage pile of shit show, just wank, their performances did not hit the heights of Pearl Mackey juggling the cyber, you know, the cyber aspect and her perception of Bill as Bill felt she was, you know, she was at the time. And to see these, you know, this, and this is where, you know, it sucks that a show like Doctor Who, when it hits the heights, those shining, shining heights, it does so much better than a lot of shows, but it just gets overlooked for these sort of things. I mean, it was never going to pick up a fucking Emmy, but you look at some of these performances and you look at, you know, and it just also does ram home again that, you know, that 3-episode arc in the middle was so bad and sucked everything down that, you know, this, you know, for what is a kid's drama still in the eyes of a lot of the world, just delivered stuff that really schooled a lot of its supposed betters. Mm-hmm. And I'm done.
No, I think you nailed it.
I think too. I'm sorry, Dolly, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think to Marcus's point, it's just with a show like this, which is still, even with its millions of viewers worldwide, really is niche when compared to a Westworld or a Game of Thrones or pretty much anything HBO has, just because of the massive, massive audience and also the quality, right? I mean, the fact is, to Marcus's point again, Doctor Who at its highs is some of the best things on television, but it's so inconsistent, especially under Moffat, right? And it's just never, never going to be considered on that level while these dips happen. And while these sort of, it's always going to be in some sense, like family friendly, not schlocky, but like very, very obviously like niche sci-fi. And I think that's an unfortunate blessing and curse, because with that alone, you could probably transcend that when you get people like Capaldi and Mackie and John Sim and Gomez, all these people on screen at the same time, right? That's phenomenal. Like, the casting is brilliant, the acting is brilliant, but when you've got people like Moffat behind it, and you know, Davies wasn't free of this either, and those dips in quality where it gets super schlocky and it gets super cliche and super sometimes it's just
Thompson Dairyman.
It's sometimes it's just bad TV.
And no, you're not wrong, mate.
You just don't see that with Westworld or Thrones, or I can't speak to Leftovers or whatever, but like there's a reason those shows soar and HBO gives them that room and that, but and of course there's budget constraint stuff too, but it's just a nonstop quality more often than not. And unfortunately we just don't see it with Who, in spite of the acting and the performances.
People watch Doctor Who and then they do Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you're right. I mean, it's budget, it's promotion. It's also the showrunners have control, but they know what they're delivering inside a tight dark, and they're not constrained. They're not basically off doing other shit as well. And we know Moffat's doing that. So maybe Chibnall can help, you know, wind this particular neck in. But as somebody who was really excited for Westworld and watched that show climb up its own ass so much, sticking out of an anus, to see it get all these nominations is just beyond the pale as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, you look at the actors that have come out of who? Eccleston was arguably, you know, between Eccleston and Tennant and Capaldi, those are the only two arguably established actors who took on the role. Tennant had only done Casanova.
Yep.
Matt Smith was an unknown, but they've gone on to.
They've all gone on, yep.
Matt Smith's been showing his bum off in The Crown. But I mean, these actors have all gone on to amazing things to show that they have the talent. So if somebody, and maybe it is Chris Chibnall, can pull the best from Moffat and the best from the Russell T. Davis era, the next series of Who with the right casting. And look, I'm prepared to give Chris Marshall a break. I am prepared. I mean, I thought, you know, I've seen him in various different shows. And again, he has this comedic timing that is actually really quite great. Anybody who's seen him in Love Actually, and some people will turn their nose up at him, at Colin Fissell. But he's hysterical. I mean, he's the idiot who gets lucky. And I mean, he's also done some other really great things where he's shown serious acting chops. I mean, just look him up on Netflix. I mean, or Hulu, there's a couple of his shows on there. Death in Paradise being another one. If he can deliver and Chibnall can deliver, and you know, if we don't get a Pearl Mackie back, because I think we won't see her again as a full-time companion because of what she's become.
Oh, agreed.
But yep. If we see maybe Nardole come back or whoever, or even a return to perhaps, you know, the Torchwood, some of the best of Torchwood, because, you know, Chibnall's involved with that, we could be on the cusp of something brilliant that will only make us yearn.
Well,
what if we'd have got a year of Capaldi with Chibnall? Just like, I mean, and do you remember wouldn't it be great if David Tennant had stayed for a year with Moffat?
Right.
And look how that turned out. No offense to Matt Smith, I mean, but that first season was incredibly uneven.
I think going back now, if you went back to any of the Matt Smith seasons, I think they're probably more uneven. I think it stands out now more with Capaldi because we've had time to kind of like coming off of our almost unmitigated nerd love of like the Russell T. Davies era and then going into the Matt. Like, I feel like we gave Matt Smith more of a pass. Maybe not towards the end, but like more of a pass that we get than we gave Capaldi. But by the time we got to Capaldi, it was such a opportunity to start fresh with stuff like that we were like, not only did they start fresh and then kind of not hit the mark, but we were kind of starting fresh with our like criticisms of like noticing Moffat type stuff. Like, oh, he did that again, huh? He did that again, huh? He's like still doing this, huh? He's still screwing up these finales. He's still screwing up these villains. Like, okay, great, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, Moffat still wrote The Day of the Doctor, which is still the best, in a nutshell, one-off episode, in my opinion, of New Who. And Matt Smith gets a lot of stick, but he did bring a new version of The Doctor. I rewatched his final couple of episodes as he was counting down to his regeneration, where he knew he was going to Trenzalore. And I thought it was great. And I mean, again, you know, he did admirably. The actors have always done the best with the material they're given, but
yeah,
Moffat's reign, unfortunately, can be summed up in two words, actually three words: Danny fucking Pink. If you look at Danny Pink as a microcosm of everything, and again, I don't blame the actor, he did the best. But, you know, he was thrown in there to, you know, almost as if to be this, you know, third wheel, this love triangle, blah, 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 which didn't work because Clara didn't look at the Doctor like that at that point. And then we had the Cyberman, and, you know, that's why the Cyberman can never be the ultimate bad guys for me, by the way. That fucking run at the end of this year, no chance.
Oh, they were
horrible. Hey, 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 now. the Dalek, like candy-coated Daleks and Daleks take Manhattan. And I'm just saying here, the Daleks are not without sin.
Like the Daleks are Lethbridge Stewart as a Cyberman saving his daughter as she falls out of a plane and then saluting the Doctor and flying off.
That was very dumb.
That was the dumbest. That was Planet Dumb on National Dumb Month. So anyway,
let's wrap up.
Let's wrap.
Wait a minute.
On the what's that? Go ahead.
I want to talk more if you guys are up for just a few minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
About the regeneration.
Yes, that's what I wanted to get into.
And Marcus had alluded to the Tenet one, which I remember hating at the time. I hated it. I hated that Davey's final stamp on the character was this selfish sort of whiny, I don't want to go bullshit.
What?
I hated it. Oh, I hated that Tenet didn't want to regenerate.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll fight about this off podcast.
That's fine. We can actually do a whole episode about this in the future.
Sure.
But at the time, I hated it. And I just thought it really wasn't in the sort of who spirit. Anyway, to the point, he did the I don't want to go thing. And I found that particularly interesting watching Capaldi do it, right? And I think this is one of the things we sort of alluded to discussing before we recorded the show. And the thing that I think is vastly different and actually much better this time is we have this doctor who is so tired, right? He's tired of changing. He's tired of dying. He's tired of being reborn. He's tired of becoming a different person. He's tired of losing people. He was out of regenerations. You know what I mean? Like this is uncharted territory for him. And it was this angry sort of like, well, fuck this. Like if this is going to happen again, I'll just die. Like, I don't want to keep doing this anymore. I don't want to become a different person. I don't want to go through this again.
Yes. Yes.
And that really struck me this time. And actually, if you look at it, maybe giving sort of context to the Tenet thing and similarities and differences. But I don't know. I just find the Capaldi thing so fascinating from a narrative standpoint and a storytelling standpoint. And I really appreciate it. And I really, really hope, that this is something that really gets, I mean, I'm assuming it's going to sort of be the crux of the Christmas special, right? And the First Doctor sort of reminding him why this is a thing that he does. But I don't know, like watching him smash his hands into the snow and just being like, no, like I've lived far, far too long. I've finally figured out, this is my interpretation of it. I finally figured out who I am. I am a good man. Like all of these things, all these people I lost, everything I had to do to get to this point, and now you're going to tell me I'm going to have to start all over again? Like I'm tired of this.
You know, there's another theory why he, I mean, obviously, I agree with you, this whole, I'm tired of this, I'm not going to do this, I don't want to change. Mm-hmm. There is another thing that is hanging, and, you know, it's not above Moffat to mess with canon again, but the Valyard.
Yeah.
The Valyard, I mean, we've had the War Doctor who has, you know, stepped out of the, you know, knocked everything out of regeneration sink. But the Valyard is still out there.
Yeah.
And maybe
wasn't in the vault.
This could be, you know, maybe I'm giving, again, Moffat way too much credit. Maybe nothing happens and comes of this. But maybe that's his fear, that he becomes, you know, the next regeneration is the one that makes him the Valyard. I mean, he's you know, tried to convert and Missy only to become them.
Hmm. I'd be down with that.
Be a total spin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or, you know, like, or yeah, I mean, yes to that, but also, like, I mean, we've seen him, like, I think those two ideas aren't necessarily, like, opposed either. Like, the idea, and we can talk about this more on our, like, speculation cast that we'll be doing, but, like, what if that is what makes him into the Valyard? Maybe that is, maybe it's, like, this the frame of mind that he's in, the state of mind that he's in is, like, you know, I've tried so hard and I've gone past the limits of what my species is supposed to be able to do, or at least what we were supposed to be able to do when I first like got to the point where I could start regenerating and stuff like that. You know, I'm past this, you know, like all this tragedy and all my deaths and all of my, you know, my losses and everything are building up in my mind. And maybe that's what, when it finally, you know, bursts, like, maybe that's what puts me in that position. You know, maybe that's what makes me the Valyard. And, or, you know, maybe he's thinking about it, maybe he's not thinking about it, but maybe that is what puts him there.
Mm-hmm. It would be interesting because it's coming at a time with this series reboot, right? New creative team, new actors and actresses and everything. I don't know how they would do it. but I would be all for it, especially since Moffat apparently was the key driving force for not wanting to do it.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
I don't know. I'd be all about a season with a new Doctor struggling with the fact that his Valyard sort of iteration is floating around as the big bad. I think that'd be really cool. And you can tell so many stories about that. I mean, that would be a Doctor season-long version of what we just saw with the Master and Missy, right? So, oh, that'd be awesome.
It won't happen.
Oh, no.
It almost won't. Certainly not, but it's fun to talk about.
Yep. But I would love it. I really would. Something different.
All right, should we wrap?
Let's wrap. Let's give I want to read a couple comments here from some of our listeners, and then we'll get into our ratings. Of course, we're going to have much more to say next week when we record, but our good friend Mike Zero, at iMikeZero, says, how many get-out-of-jail-free cards does the Doctor have in the universe now? Immortal Bill, Clara, me, the pilot. Everyone always wonders what the Master is doing, putting on eyeliner and biding their time. Stabbing and shooting himself in the back is the most Master thing ever. Doesn't even have the loyalty to himself. I thought that was pretty good. Bo Andre Ingverson at Bachby writes, so Bill became a cosmic entity. Have we ever met almost Dr. Manhattan or Speed Force type beings before? And then at King Llama 00 Barclay Lucky says, have watched finale a few times now. Could write a novel on what worked and what didn't. Main question, though. Why couldn't Nardole do more work against the Cybermen? He's not human and doesn't have two hearts, so they wouldn't be interested in him.
Well, he's humanoid. He might actually, but we don't know. We don't know. And I saw this tweet. But I don't know if Nardole is classified as human. I think he might be because he was rebuilt. And you know, this thing did come through. Somebody raised this a couple of weeks ago when I was like, oh, Nardole's a cyborg or whatever. But I mean, he was given a job. He was given a job to protect the children, and you know, no matter how much license he has to kick the Doctor's ass, which was just again the best lines. I think you know he basically knew what he had to do, and he went off to do it. So I mean, you know, he doesn't exactly strike me as a major combat force. His tactical skills are great, but not so much when it comes to getting into the front lines.
Yeah, actually, I can't picture Nardole. Nardole would like sell you the guns or build you the guns that you took to fight the Cybermen. Nardole wouldn't be the guy out there shooting.
Yeah.
Although he did say that if left alone, he would have them all fighting for a black market.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He has to. I mean, speaking of this really, really quick, he has to go back for them, right? Like,
somebody will have to.
Whatever next in like, he's. He's not going to leave Nardole there to die with all those people, right? Like,
or Bill can go swing by, pick him up.
That was one of the. Yeah, that's true too. As long as I just hope something like there's a passing reference to that because.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just one of the few.
I hope that the Doctor gets Nardole as a companion next season. Bill.
Oh yeah, sure.
Like I said, we're more powerful than the Doctor now, as far as we know. But the idea of Nardole coming back and maybe helping with the transition is one that sounds appealing to me, and you know I love Matt Smith. So.
Matt Lucas.
Lucas Smith, whatever.
Same guy.
Exactly. We love Matt Smith too. We love Matt Smith.
Matt Smith. Look, we're all excited when Capaldi said, you know, as Sean was saying earlier, we were excited when you know Matt Smith was going and blah blah blah. But he dealt with some crap. But he was also a unique portrayal of the Doctor.
Yeah,
and you know the thing I will say that, with the exception maybe of Eccleston, when we've seen the regeneration speeches of these doctors, it feels like it's the actor's thoughts,
right?
Especially with Tennant, especially with you come up with Capaldi because they were the fans, but Matt Smith's felt so personal that I will always cherish the time that I was the Doctor,
right.
And I'm paraphrasing a little,
but yeah, no, you're totally right, though.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the beauty of the regeneration scenes. No matter what issues we have, you know, I don't want to go, blah blah blah. I mean, it worked for David Tennant. I mean, his character was, you know, up and down in those final specials. If you remember the War of Mars,
Yeah.
The Time Lord triumphant, the last of his species, not bowing to the rules. Oh, he's too old. And then he's too old. He's done this too long. And then he sacrifices himself for wealth and doesn't want, you know, at the end of the day, the whole I don't want to go felt as if that was David Tennant delivering that line.
Yes, totally.
And that's why we love the show, because no matter who they get in, they embrace the part.
Exactly.
They become one with the Doctor. And that's something we, you know, we'll always love these actors for.
No matter how bad the episodes have been, or you know, good or bad or uneven or up and down or whatever, like nobody involved with Doctor Who, I feel like, you know, I don't feel like Stephen Moffat even is like phoning it in. I don't think he's collecting a paycheck. I think he cares about what he's doing. I think he has some like funny ideas about like what the best direction a lot of the times is to take. But like, yeah. I feel like everybody involved with this project cares about this project and wants to do good by it and do well by it, especially the actors who play the Doctors, like 100%.
Yeah. I mean, one of the earliest things we talked about was how much of a shame it was Matt Smith was let down. Like, you know, he wound up showing so much range, and the episodes and the writing just never supported the actor. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. It did well, on occasion.
Let's wrap up. Let's give ourselves, let's see, how about out of 5 evolutions of Cybermen, what would you give this episode, Steven?
5001 out of 5? Is that all right? I think that works.
That's fine. Marcus?
4.75.
Wow.
I can't go overboard on it. There was still some issues. There's definitely the drag factor from the previous episode, because this is a two-parter. But, I mean, those shining moments were just, they were shining and beautiful.
Sean?
I'm going to say 5.
Okay. I'm going to give this the 5est of 5s possible. I love this episode. I think we all enjoyed it. And we're going to talk more next week about kind of the whole season in general, and Moffat's tenure, and some of the rumors, and when we think we'll hear some announcements on the next Doctor and so forth. But until then, you can find us at Lonely TARDIS on Twitter, lonelytardis.com. You could find us individually. I'm at Dolly Domofsky. Sean.
Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Facebook. Lonely TARDIS on Facebook. Please join our group. We have a lot of awesome commentary there. A lot of great people in there. Most definitely. Sean.
Burton. SHJUNNORTON.
Steven.
On Twitter.
That's STEVENSTROM on Twitter. It's Steven Strong.
And you can find all the links to his great work there. Marcus.
You got him before I could.
just look for me. You'll find me.
Yeah. He's at an great group, and he's manning our Facebook group. And in the immortal words of the Doctor and Bill. Actually, about Bill. It's a big universe.
I know. Sorry about that. Dolly was just whittering on a little too much there. Sean, it's just you and me, mate. Do you want to finish up the show?
It's a big universe, but we hope to see you again. See you later, everybody. Love you. Bye.
I didn't do it that time.
Oh, damn it, Sean.
We'll see you guys next week right here on Lonely TARDIS.
Or the week after.
7 days. Give or take.